Okay. But tonight I'm very pleased to welcome back to Many Rivers. What is this, the third or fourth business?
Second time we present.
I feel like I know you so well.
But it was actually almost exactly a year ago.
Almost exactly a year ago. Yeah. It's wonderful to welcome back to Many Rivers Jan Bodie and Mary Stella Church. And they will be speaking tonight on Lessons from Earth Spirit, a Vortex Journey Beyond Beliefs. Thank you so much for coming back to Many Rivers. It's good to see you.
Thank you. And welcome everyone to an evening where the full moon will be rising shortly at a 9:11 tonight. So if you've been feeling the vibes, enjoy tonight's journey. Long, long ago, before time was measured, before space was a concept, two souls, with an uncountable number of others, separated from source. They were points of light, curious, ready for an adventure, ready to become conscious of self. After a while, they returned to source, to the comfort and sacredness of the oneness. Nourished and refreshed, off they go again, gradually staying longer with each visit, until they forgot their sacred selves. Meanwhile, Earth evolved, and at some point, perhaps at the beginning of time, they came here in some form or another. And when they took human form, these two souls spent many lifetimes together. Father and son, mother and daughter, husband and wife, cousins, best friends. They lived in Ireland, in Greece, Atlantis, many places. Sometimes one was a priestess in spirit, and the other a priestess in body, and they worked together in that way. In the most recent cycle, though one was born in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and another in Santa Rosa, California, these two souls had a promise they wanted to keep, a purpose they needed to live. And the journey began when they came together in 1993. And after spending a year coming to know each other, and part of that coming to know each other was working with a mutual friend named Tony, who teaches philosophy, mythology, but it's getting to the deep parts of the self, and a wonderful, wonderful teacher and friend. And so when Jan and I met, I was an international tour director, and so I was used to traveling all over the world. And meeting up with Tony, you know, teaching philosophy, I'm going, we should go to Greece together. And he should, like, teach us in Greece so we can, like, be where Socrates and Plato were and feel the energy and all of this. So he finally agreed, and we put together a trip to Greece featuring Tony as our teacher. And then, being as we were going to Greece anyway, Jan and I decided that we wanted to get married there. That, you know, we'd only known each other a year, but that didn't matter. We were certain we were going to get married at the Delphic Oracle. That's what we chose. Nice spot. So when putting together a tour in a different country, you go through people there who put together the tours and they plan them, and then you have a country guide so that the history is always represented properly. And there was one gentleman, Dimitri, that I always worked with, and he was a good colleague, and so called him, and we put this tour together, and it was all very exciting, and many of the people that we studied with chose to come, and so a nice group getting together. And I had asked him ahead of time if he would be able to get us permission to go to the Delphic Oracle after hours to do a ceremony. Now, that doesn't break every single rule of going to a sacred site in Greece. I don't know what does. But he agreed. You know, he wanted to please me, so he was going to agree to do this. And here and there, miscommunications, he did it, but then he canceled the plans. So by the time we left for Greece, there were no plans made. There were no, you know, he hadn't been able to make anything in particular work for us along those lines. But I figured once we got there, we would be able to deal with that. And we were sitting, once we arrived, he and I were sitting in the lobby and we were talking. And he finally said, "What is the big deal about this wedding thing? It's like, who is it that's getting married that's so special that you go through all of this?" And I just had to take a really, really deep breath and say, okay, here comes the first challenge. Because he was a business colleague. And I had to say to him, the ceremony is for me. I'm the one getting married. And this is who I'm going to marry. And, you know, not overly accepting of our relationship, and quite stunned at the information, and I was a little frightened that now things would go really awry, because, you know, he would take it out on us in subtle ways and this kind of thing. But after a few deep breaths, he said, "Sure, okay." He said, "Don't worry about it. I'll make it work. I will make something work."
That was a big challenge. She was actually quite anxious having that conversation. I was not present during it. Well, so there we were. We had arrived in Athens. And the first full day we were there, we went to Mars Hill. And Mars Hill is the place, it overlooks the Parthenon, and it's a beautiful site. And that's where Socrates sat with his pupils and had the discourses, the teachings. And it was really, we were all so excited to be there and to settle in. And it was the first day of, I forget, I think it was a 10-day journey we
two
had.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. So Tony's big into philosophy and mythology, and he has a lot of wisdom to share, but also very deep probing questions to ask us. And one of the biggest ones, as it turned out, was he asked us, and he looked around and said, "So why are you really here?" And we were sort of stunned by that question, and we ended up doing a meditation. And when we came out of it, Mary Stuller was the very first one to speak, and she said, "I'm here to marry myself." That was very thought-provoking for the rest of us. We hadn't gone there, that the first commitment to know thyself, to be truthful with thyself, to love thyself, what an amazing way to put it, to marry oneself in order to be who you are in the world. So that was a wonderful way to start our trek, our pilgrimage throughout Greece. At the time, no one knew about our wedding plans except Tony, and that was very deliberate on our part. This whole trip, pilgrimage really, that we were on as a group was based on Tony's authority. He's a professor, an author, a scholar, a teacher, a writer. And Mary Stella and I felt we were being appropriate by not making our personal peace during this time part of the group journey. That we planned it so that by the time we were at Delphi, which is at the end of our trip, that it would be during an afternoon where it was free personal time. And that's when Tony and, you know, the three of us would go off and do the ceremony. And felt that was very appropriate. But as the days went by, and we were a very congenial group, as Mary Stella mentioned, we pretty much knew, most of us knew each other. And the people we didn't know, all, you know, we all became friends. But after a while, this very subtle shift happened. And there was a discord. And it seemed like many of the others were sort of pacing off into smaller groups, either one and one or three or four people at a time, and whispering. Sometimes, you know, and they're not having happy faces, you know, they were in deep discussion, or they were angry, or they were, and it was very clear neither Mary Stella nor I were invited. Mm-hmm. And this was shocking to us. And it was quite upsetting. So after a couple of days of this, one night in the hotel, we went to Tony's room and said, Tony, you know, you must have noticed what we've noticed. Really feels lousy. What's going on? And especially Mary Stella, I think, even more, because although there was an official guide required for the sites to give the accurate information, Mary Stella was the group guide. You know, she was the one who was holding us together, you know, on the bus and at hotels and, you know, all the other pieces one gets to juggle, and it's a lot. So Mary Stella was really distraught by this, but I was too emotionally. And Tony looked up at us and he said, well, they know there's a secret. I was stunned. How could they know there was a secret? Three of us knew and never discussed it, we didn't think, in public. But it appeared, I mean, it went in. We took it in. There's a secret. So what happened? We stumbled back to our room, and the next morning, we all got on the bus after breakfast, and Mary Stella and I went up to the microphone and said, we have an announcement, quite gleefully and joyfully, and told everyone that we were going to get married in Delphi when we arrived there near the end of the at the end of the trip. And it would be on an afternoon when it was free personal time, but we'd be so happy if any of you wanted to join us. And so we put this invitation out, we you know, told them what it was, hoping this would change everything. And the faces of everyone in the bus, deadpan, no expression whatsoever. We stopped talking and, you know, just figured there'd be a wow or some reaction, some words, sound, yay. Thundering silence. Nothing said, no sound whatsoever. It was pretty devastating. I'm laughing now, but it wasn't funny.
So it came clear to us slowly that even though everyone in this group knew us, very much celebrated our relationship, just mm-hmm. thought we were the cutest couple kind of thing. But the minute we used the word married, we're going to get married at the in Delphi, that, uh-oh, you know, the question started. What do I feel about that? How does that really work for me? And the good news was that gelling that we needed, because as a tour director, you have a group of 40 people who've never met, or people who sort of know each other, And if they don't gel by the second day, then you have 40 individuals to keep track of instead of a nice group moving together through a foreign country, and it gets really hard. So it was what was needed to gel the group. The question that needed to be put to them was put to them, how do I feel about this? And being as the whole journey was about going deep and finding self, it was a perfect opportunity for people to go into this. And to our delight and surprise, there was one man on the tour who was he was close to 80 at the time, and a Republican, ex-military, you know, pretty strict fellow. And he was the one person that would turn to the others and look at them and go, "What is the matter with you? Can't you see they just love each other?" Like, what is the problem here? I mean, he was the only one who was certain from the beginning that this was pretty cool, and he was glad he was there for it. So, and then a couple of days, several days before we arrived in Delphi, one of the other women in the group who had a pagan background came and asked if she could offer us a ritual as a wedding gift, and we were very touched. You could see that it was turning around, and that we still didn't know if everyone would come to the wedding or not, but at least it was airing that things were opening up. So the day before arriving in Delphi, the plan was that we would arrive at the hotel at a nice, reasonable hour. It was a beautiful seashore place that Jan and I would have time to really just be together and think about the ceremony and write our vows and all those kinds of things. But in this particular trip, we had changed the itinerary and gone to Sparta, which wasn't usually the way the tour would go. And the driver got lost leaving Sparta, and instead of taking the Autobahn, which meant it would have been about an hour into Olympia, he went over the top of the mountain. This was a big mountain. And that road was like one lane big. So any cars that we met had to like back out of the way, and I swear the whole mountain was like sheer on one side and sheer on the other, and these villages were built so that the balconies were hanging over the roads, and the bus barely fit under these balconies as we go along. I mean, it was just amazing. It was an absolutely gorgeous day, and really quite wonderful. Getting lost was always best, I think, when we were on tour, but it also meant that we were really late, and we didn't really want to totally rush through Olympia. We got to the hotel. When you book a room in Greece, you get a meal with it. So dinner comes with a room. And it's not like a restaurant where you go when you feel like it. It's like, you know, dinner's open from 5 to 7. You miss it, you miss it. That's it. And we were like right on the edge of the dinner hour, and we were trying to get everybody in and get their keys and get set so that they could go to the, you know, dinner before the dining room closed. And out of nowhere, this man comes running up to me, and he said, "You must be Mary Stella." I didn't know this person from anybody, and I'm trying to get her, you know. And I'm like, okay, we're supposed to, you know, I want to do the wedding stuff, and here, you know, it's silly, you know. And then there's this fellow standing right in front of me. And it turns out his name is Jeremy, and Jeremy is a very dear friend of Jan. And he had found out that we were planning the ceremony in Delphi, and he had contacted Tony ahead of time, and got all the information he needed to catch up with us so that he could be there for the wedding and take pictures. He was a photographer by trade. And so there's Jeremy. And Jeremy had waited all day for us because we were really supposed to arrive hours before then. He was ready to leave, thinking he would go to Delphi and hopefully catch up with us there, you know, because something happened to us. But So the evening wasn't at all what we had anticipated or planned.
It was really funny too, because the rest of us were standing aside with the luggage and everything while Mary Stella was negotiating dinner and getting room keys so we could get our luggage at least upstairs and then come down for a meal. And I'm standing there and I see this guy walk across the lobby up to Mary Stella, and I went, my God, he looks just like Jeremy, to myself. But of course it couldn't be Jeremy. I mean, Jeremy lived in New Mexico. And it turns out it was. So that was an amazing, amazing gift and surprise. Well, we got through that adventure, that part of the adventure, and we got through that challenge. And the next morning we did arrive in the town of Delphi. And when we stopped at the hotel to get settled and again get rid of, you know, move the luggage out, and then we were going to the sacred site. And Mary Stella had mentioned our Greek guide, who really didn't quite understand this wedding thing, this marriage thing. But she understood it was going to happen. So she gave us the greatest gift she could possibly give us. At hotels in Greece, they're all these single little beds, and every once in a while there's a room with a double bed. So she went up and got all the keys to the room and grabbed a set and handed them to Mary Stella and said, these are the keys to the room with the only double bed in this hotel. Which was really sweet of her to do, given she was flustered about this. Then off we went to the sacred site. And that really was a spectacular adventure. And we did the pilgrimage. We started at the bottom where the tradition was, and of course you don't do this physically now, you get to do it energetically, but where it's a cleansing area, where, you know, you would be washed and be cleansed. And of course they don't let you do that now, there's not water there as such, but symbolically it's a cleansing area. And then we would hike up to the next sort of way station area, and then the next, and it kept going. The one I remember, for some reason I was surprised. I don't think of myself as being so naive, but one of the stops was called the treasury, and that was where you had to bring gifts and money and all these things. Of course, I hadn't thought of that. And of course, the higher we climbed, the more view we got. And it is one of the more spectacular sights I personally have ever experienced. And finally we reach the top where the oracle is. And it is gated now. I mean, and this was, well, I know it was 20 years ago. We just celebrated on May 12th our 20th wedding anniversary. So it's you can't walk right up to it. I mean, you certainly can't touch it. You know, you can see it and you get sort of close, but maybe as close as, you know, I am to Melanie right now. But that's it. You know, it's a circular space. And there was a moment of temptation, I have to say, because it looked like just it was our group and a few other tourists to just try to sneak in there for a moment. But we knew better, and thank God and Goddess that we did. Because not seconds later, as I look up, there is the guards up in the trees in the bushes with guns. They wouldn't have shot us, but they really, if they are serious, that you can't go there. So then, after that, after we did this whole, and it really was a pilgrimage, it was a true journey of self and of with questions and will you find the answers. And then after we came down, the driver was still there, but our guide had left. We knew she she had to leave early, the trip early. It was our last day, but we would be there that night, and then we would be making our way back to Athens. So we had the same driver, but he didn't speak any English at all, and we were certainly not versed in the Greek language. But she had given him instructions that he would take us back to the hotel for lunch, and then he would be in the parking lot, and we would get back on the bus, and he would take us back to the sacred site, because that was the deal, that was the agreement. Meanwhile, on the trek, we discovered that it was a major holiday in Greece. Challenges. So Easter was late that year.
Early.
Easter was early that year. That's right. It was early. No, it was late.
It was early. Because it was, I know, but.
Okay. It was later, okay. Early, but it was a different
date right,
than usual.
It was late.
So, May Day is also a major celebration in Greece, and a lot of the old countries know this, because that's a very old tradition, celebrating May Day, celebrating spring. So, because Easter fell when it did, it covered May 1st and days after that. So on May 12th, we were celebrating May Day in Greece. But on May 12th, May Day, all the sacred sites were closing early. Now, we were going back in the afternoon to do our wedding. We were getting married. And no one knew what time they'd close. We asked everyone we found, anyone in uniform, anyone who looked official. Oh, I don't know, sometime later. Mañana, I don't know. So, I that part's too funny for me. So I'm going to end this segment with. So we did. We went back and we started to rush through lunch, so we could get to our rooms because we had special wedding clothes to get.
So, not only were we losing the only person who spoke English that day, every day we'd been there in the spring, it had rained. Little sprinkles in the afternoon, so we were looking for those clouds. It was May Day. We didn't know what time any of the sites were going to close or what our driver, I mean, we couldn't, you know, communicate with him at all. So, you know, hopefully everything would work out there. And so we still didn't know who all was coming, if everyone was coming or how everyone settled in this question about our getting married. So we all got dressed and we went out to the bus and everybody in the group came. Mm-hmm. And everybody was dressed to the nines in the most beautiful clothes, big hats, and I mean absolutely gorgeous. It really felt like a wedding day. And we were so happy and so pleased. And the driver drove us to the Temple of Athena. The Temple of Athena is one of the steps in preparing to go up to see the Delphic Oracle. And the path down to the ruins is, you know, it's a pretty steep, you know, not steep, but, you know, a good path with stairs at the end to get down to the bottom. George was 80 and his wife was, you know, not much younger than him. So, but the group spread out and they cased the area and they made Jen and I stay up above with our attendants. We each had an attendant and who were to, you know, to take care of us. Well, you know, I'm the tour director and now the time is going on and I'm going, oh, they're going to close and this and that, you know, and everybody has still disappeared. I don't know when they're coming back and all of this. And finally, Jonathan came back and he said, we're ready for you. And he led us just a little ways down the path. And then he held out his arms and picked each of us up individually and lifted us over a gully off the trail. And we continued through the, it was springtime, so there were tall grasses and red poppies swaying in the wind, absolutely gorgeous. And we walked along an upper ridge, so we're higher up still on the hillside, and you look down and there's the temple of Athena, the ruins of the temple down below us. And we walk into an opening in the this wooded area where everyone had gathered, and they were standing in a circle to receive us. And two of the people in the circle took their jackets off and laid them down on the grass for us to sit on. And right there they had me. I was in tears. It was like the most generous offering. It was just so beautiful. And Jory had come through and collected things from us and from other people to represent the four directions, you know, so that she could cast a circle in a safe space for us to do this ritual in. And being the only pagan, she had her, you know, cut out for her, so she had chosen four people, or they had offered to hold the different directions. And the woman holding the west was she was a doctor. And she was very strict in her thinking. And, I mean, we would go so far as to say, you know, like anal retentive kind of a person who, you know, was just... And to see her holding the West with pure heart was the most tremendous gift we could ever receive. To see this absolute transformation in this woman from when we started the trip to this day sitting on the hillside up above. I mean, absolutely amazing. And they had asked everyone to write their wishes for us on a piece of paper, and they bought a chalice to burn them in as part of the ritual. And just absolutely beautiful. But we had made it clear that we wanted to do our vows at the site, at the temple below, that's where we really wanted to exchange our vows. So when the ritual part was over, when we opened the circle and we, as a processional, left this beautiful grove and went back out onto the main path, and just as we started down to where the ruins are, this really large black snake came out, crossed in front of us on the path. And again, amazing. Not one person screamed. Not one person said, "Oh my God, I'm not going down in that grass. That's where the snake just went." Everybody knew that we had just been blessed by Athena. And on Athena's shield is the serpent. So, I mean, we all knew right there. And so we continued.
We did. And it was an astounding descent. First, it was on the earth, you know, it was the earthen pathway. And then eventually we came to where the old steps were. And there we go, step after step after step. And we have maybe about a third of the way left. We can see the bottom now. And suddenly, throngs of people are coming up the steps. Oh, they're closing early. We haven't made it to the bottom yet. And they're all leaving. And Mary Stella and I looked at each other. We didn't have to say a word. We're going down. We were called to do this. We had no doubt. So and everyone was with us, the whole contingent. Down we went. And more people. And the area we could see was being cleared out. I mean, and there were guards. Guards at the bottom, just, you know, waving them up the stairs. And we kept coming down. And as we reached the bottom, and I remember, I think my foot actually touched, got off the last step and touched that piece of the earth, the guards just looked at us turned their back to us, walked across the way to their guardhouse, and stayed there. And we continued around and came to the stones below Athena's temple. The next thing we did is we sat on those stones to do a meditation. You're not supposed to sit on the stones. And we knew that. But we also knew we were doing them no harm. I mean, we were being very respectful. And we were doing something sacred in our meditation. The guards never looked towards us. I truly believe Athena had given them a sign. And George, the only person we had really been concerned about would really not feel comfortable that two women were getting married, who was the one who straightened everyone else out, as you may remember, is sitting there on a rock, his hands on his lap, and his hands like this. Blew me away when I saw that. I mean, you never would picture George doing this. And later, when we mentioned it to him, he said, "I didn't do that. I don't even know how to do that." And so later, "George, here's a picture." It was so precious. It really was. And then Maristella and I, followed by Tony, climbed the steps up to the temple area, you know, which, you know, many of the large stones have fallen, of course, but there we were, and Tony went around and stood between us, behind us, so we were facing each other, and the people were facing, the rest of the group was facing us. And it was very sweet, and it was very sacred, and very joyful. And somewhere during those moments, I remember out of the corner of my eye seeing two people come through, and I thought, "Oh, how interesting. Two more people got past the guards." That's the only thought I could think of. I have no idea who they were until later.
And there was a couple, a man and a woman, and the gentleman had, you know, he moved back. He kind of stayed back, but his wife came and literally joined our circle and just sat with us, and her energy was so great, it was perfect. It didn't matter at all. And afterwards, we went to talk to her and her husband, and they had been traveling throughout Greece looking for the sacred in the sacred sites. And she said that she had not been able to find it until now. When she was able to come and join our circle and sit at the temple of Athena, did she find the sacred energy there. So we invited them to come to dinner with us. We had made plans for a restaurant up in town, and their dinner was included with their room. We had had ours changed to lunch included. So she said, "Well, we can't be there right away, but we'll come join you." And when we got back to the hotel, their room was directly underneath our room at the hotel. So we're looking over and chatting to each other, and so we made our procession up to the restaurant, and the group had gotten a cake and a replica of the Temple of Athena to put on the cake. And so when it came time, the waiters, they brought the cake out and presented it to Jan and I and sang us happy birthday. In English. So we figured they flat just didn't understand, or it was the only song they knew. But we received it with great joy. And a few minutes later, the couple that we had just met came in, and she was just so apologetic that she didn't have a gift for us. We had just met them 2 hours ago. But it turns out that what she does for a living is she takes the old myths and writes them into children's books. How perfect. a person to come to our wedding, so unannounced. And so she said, what I do have to give you is a story. And she told the story of Ruth and Naomi.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just beautiful. What a perfect gift, a perfect time. It was beautiful, and the entire thing was a blessing. And we all, you know, we got up and we joyfully wandered back to our hotel, and it's just remarkable, remarkable experience. So you may be wondering, we asked in the piece that we wrote and put out, what does a wedding at the Temple of Athena in Greece have in common with vortexes in... Do you need some water? Stella? Do you need some water? What does it have in common with vortexes in Santa Rosa? Early on in our journey, a shaman from Ecuador came and spent time with us. And when he met us, the first thing that he said was, "Your love is the first vortex. It is what makes the other vortexes possible." And we have come to learn that this journey of getting married in Greece and all the things that had to be challenged and let go of, all of the things that we had to walk through and make different in order to prepare the space for this particular thing to be birthed, was very similar to the opening of the vortexes on our land.
True, they were never, you know, it was never planned. We didn't know it would happen. But in each vortex, now there's a dozen vortices and portals on this little half acre that we're on in Santa Rosa. And each of them have a different, very different story. Most of them have been reawakened. They were open back when. One we know was birthed since we've been there. But they've all had the challenges, the unexpected that happened. And in many cases, they were challenges to us, and we would be very confused about what was going on or what we needed to do or not do, as the case may be. And then once we were able to move into acceptance of what is and just be present, the blessings just kept coming. So it really has been an amazing journey. That's continuing.
She knows it's question and answer time.
I don't know. Maybe it's premature. I just wanted to ask if you could, maybe you did this earlier, that did come in late, I'm not sure, but I would like to know what you mean by a vortex. I mean, I know the basic word, you know, what it would say in the dictionary, and I know the idea of, like, in Sedona, there's certainly, I've heard, you know, I'm very familiar with the idea of there being energy vortexes,
mm-hmm.
but I'm the kind of person that wants to know more about what that means, and so I was wondering if you could define what you're referring to when you say it's a vortex.
Yes, I'll define it in two different ways. One is the way that I've understand in a more, you know, not exactly scientific, but, you know, semi-scientific way, which
mental
is
way, yeah.
it's you know, the energy of the earth is electric and magnetic energies, as is mainly our bodies. So when those energies from the earth that are alive in the earth surface, you're not just in the earth, but they're above the earth, where we walk, where we sit, where we spend time, then that's when it's called the vortex. This is my understanding. This is when there is direct contact with that earth energy and this physical human energy. And when that happens, many different things, there's many possibilities. We have vortices on the land that can be known as for a certain type of energy, but it can be different depending on my energy. I might have a different experience every day.
So I got the images you were talking, almost mm-hmm. a plugging in of like a wall outlet and a plug coming together.
That's,
you know, but
that can work.
I've never thought of the earth energies as being buried. I've always thought of them as being throughout the earth.
Well, they
so
are.
This
I'm
idea
sure they
of something
are.
Surfacing is a new.
Mm. Well, it's hard for me to language
yeah.
because I'm not schooled in that way, but it gives you a picture of if this area would be a vortex, that in this area this energy would have risen up so that we're not just walking on it, we're walking in it, if that makes sense. I don't know how else to put it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my sense of a vortex almost like a swirling thing.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we
it's
think
moving
of the
energy.
As, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So
the chakras.
Kind of like a tornado, but on an energetic level, or yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I also have this sense in my head of a vortex being an opening between dimensions or worlds. Well,
we call that a
portal.
Okay, so that's in your mind, that's a different thing, and that's called a portal. And on your land, you have both.
Mm-hmm.
How many vortexes and how many portals?
This is combined is more than a dozen at this point.
And so tell me the difference between a portal and a vortex. What's a portal then, in the way that you understand?
Okay,
it?
And then we're going to go to if there's questions about the stories we were telling and
okay, yeah,
challenges and
okay.
blessings, and they may or may not be, but
okay.
I want to check that out. Do you want to do the portal one?
For me, the vortex energy is measurably different energy from the earth. So I'm affected by it when I'm in it, whether it's higher or lower than all the spaces around it, that it's different. Whereas a portal, for me, is more dimensional. It allows movement dimensionally. So it's very different, and it
like moving from third to fourth dimension is an example. We're in the third dimension.
Hmm. Well, I don't know, I can't remember hearing you explain it exactly before, but I've always thought of a portal as being like a doorway,
mm-hmm.
a portal, and spirits. Maybe that don't reside here can go there or
mm-hmm.
Can come here or go there or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't ever clear to me whether we could go there through that or not until we, you know, passed on from our physical body. I wasn't sure about that. But I thought that, you know, like when we're in a circle and we call in spirits,
mm-hmm.
they're coming through the portals
mm-hmm.
to join us. Yes.
That's one kind.
It is definitely one of the ways of experiencing a portal.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone have anything to add?
And people do go through portals too, as well as spirits.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking too about the word vortex, and I think literally it means the whirling energy. So it like a chakra. Anyone want to contribute to this part of the conversation? Anyone else?
I just had a little aside. When you said something about birth, somebody had said something to you about birth, I thought, well, that's really was rather appropriate than singing Happy Birthday.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
like a birthday
yes.
of your...
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Was, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions?
Do you feel like you encouraged these vortexes, or is that coming in the story? Just jumping ahead.
We have been surprised by them.
Mm-hmm.
What we have come to know in hindsight is that Spirit literally had us in training separately, and then when we came together, I mean, it was an instant recognition. I mean, Jan walked into a room where I was and turned to me and looked at me and said, "Why are you looking at me as though you know me?" I mean, instant recognition. And my response was, "Because I do. Somehow I do." And so, you know, we had come back together for this, that my godfather had built this house on this piece of property. And I feel as though I emerged from that piece of soil, and, you know, that connected to that piece of land, and then the house came to me upon my parents' death, and then we moved in. And the first thing that happened was we were sent to Sedona. We kept being called to Sedona to do work there with groups and bring groups to Sedona. And then, to our surprise, after a ritual, that a vortex opened in our room, but it was totally a surprise. We were not working to make that happen. We were just as surprised and going, "Excuse me? Hey, what?"
Do you think you triggered them?
We came to know over time that the piece of land we live on was Pomo healing land, that there were vortexes open on that land for many, many years, and that's where the shamans did their work. And there was a battle that was absolutely horrible. It was emotional, physical, spiritual battle over the energies, and that the shamans veiled them in order to protect them. Then healing needed to happen. It was like everything else, you know, all these pieces needed to come back together before it was time for them to open, which is why we say we were in training. As we look back and all the things that we've done before we met and since we met, it was preparing us for them to be unveiled.
Is that like what you're talking about when you say all the challenges that you had with the wedding, that those the similar challenges that the portals were going through, mm-hmm. so waiting for the perfect timing and the veiling, and like when Athena veiled the guard's eyes for you guys and all that,
mm-hmm.
and to get it to the moment where it could come back
yeah,
to fruition.
You got it. Yeah.
I mean, we were told one particular vortex was needed. I mean, that something was happening in the spot, and it was 2 years. You're looking at two Aries here. We call it the P word. They're teaching us patience over and over. But then in hindsight, we look back and realize, oh, that had to happen first, or I see, okay, that needed to shift before that energy could come in. So it's been like that the whole time, and the wedding is just like an example of that, not being a vortex opening on our land, but how spirit orchestrates.
And it's sort of how everyone's lives go, if you really think about it. You know, sometimes we try to force something to happen because we're just going to make it happen, and usually that doesn't turn out so well. You know, if we really try to force our way, because maybe it's not the right time. It's not about giving up, it's not about throwing your hands up, but it's maybe time to reflect a little, step back, and see what, you know, see where it goes. But yeah, we have really been taught patience big time. And grief. You know, this big battle was a big battle, and there was a whole year I call my year of grief.
A year of what?
Grief.
Grief.
When we have a redwood forest in our yard, and I was on that back path, and I was suddenly pulled down to the ground. I mean, I didn't trip. I literally, and the energy pulled me down, and I started sobbing and sobbing and sobbing, and I had no idea why. Didn't have a clue. And it passed, you know, and I probably was there for a good 20 minutes. The thing is, it kept happening for almost a year, several days a week. And at first I just thought, okay, I'm just clearing some old grief. You know, I mean, you know, you try to rationalize these things. You know, after a while I started to think I was crazy. But one day I got a vision. And I saw a river going through the land into the property next door. And that river was red with blood. and I saw little children, and I saw, you know, natives in armor, you know, in their war clothes, and I suddenly understood the whole thing. As I was in some way a vehicle for the human tears about this battle, about this death, about this devastation of an entire culture. And there was a whole different time a few years later. We were at some event at Juliet Park in Santa Rosa, some celebration, I don't remember what it was. And I was pulled to a booth that was way on the other end. We were just going to go sit in the shade because I'm sun sensitive. And I said, "Oh, Mary Stella, we got to go over there." And she's used to this. "Okay," she says. So we trek across, you know, to the other side of Juilliard Park, and I walk up to a booth. I know how to be appropriate. I didn't even say hello to this person. I don't know what the booth was about. As soon as I saw his face, I said, "I have to tell you about the land we live on." And he said, "No, you don't. I'm going to tell you." He was a Native American. He was already in trance, and he told us about that battle. And that is another true story. Mm-hmm. And the stories go on and on and on. This has been our lives for the last, the first one opened in... what happened to us started immediately, but the first vortex opened in our living room on spring equinox in 2001 at the end of a 5-hour ritual. And it's continued on.
Was that experience you just told us about the Native American man that happened after you had that vision?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yes.
A lot of what we knew before then was given to us by spirit. I'm a visual intuitive, mm-hmm. so I see things. But, you know, he was just spot. He did exactly the same thing that we had been receiving, he was telling us.
We did, we work with energy a lot, obviously. And we did a house cleansing down off of Stony Point, past Hearn. And this also was some years ago now. And she was a young woman. Her husband was in Iraq. She had two little kids, and they were being disturbed at night by what we'll call ghosts or beings or whatever. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is that it was another whole energy situation where in the end, both she and we knew that our lands were connected, and they were part of the Pomo land, and there was a big vortex on her land too. But it was I don't know what word to use there. It was a dark one. It was one that needed some
cleaning.
Needed some love.
Our sense is that pretty much running from Hearn to Piner Road, all along that area. And we have a friend who is works with Caltrans, and she gave us a map of the area that marks where the Spanish land grants were all through this area, and where we were in relation to it. And we were lakefront property. The Laguna used to be a lake that ran all the way out to Santa Rosa. And we were right on the edge of that lake, and so that area right there along the lake was Native healing land.
And then later, the Spanish were there.
Do you know, happen to know anything about Sebastopol or in this area around here?
In terms of Pomo,
and, you know.
I don't have any specifics, no. We've been pretty focused on this half acre, and then just what it, you know,
mm-hmm.
what else comes out. But yes.
So the different vortices,
mm-hmm.
and all these different energies, are they? In what ways are you utilizing them?
That's an interesting question. Wow. How are we utilizing? That's a big question. We do a lot of circles. celebrate all the seasons. We spend time on the land. Some of it, you know, just being on the land, and some of it grooming it, you know, just being within that one. And we work with clients and the energies. And we do a lot of, I'm going to use the word we pray. It's not in the usual sense, but I don't know what other word to use. And we talk to the ancestors of the land a lot.
We have a summer solstice coming up in next weekend.
I think it is. We have a flyer somewhere.
Yeah, over here.
Did you have something in mind when you asked the question, or it was just open?
No, I was just wondering, you know, in what way how it's, you know, perhaps beneficial for the land itself, beneficial for people who need healing.
Very much so.
You know.
Yeah.
But
it's different because everyone is different in their energy and it relates different. If someone comes to us to do individual healing work, we do it in, Jan and I work together with the person and it creates a three instead of a one-on-one where there's a, you know, a power figure and a healer, you know, healing figure. It creates a whole different dynamic. And then, we follow what we're told. What vortex do we need to go to? What energy do we need to utilize to help move this energy?
Yeah.
And so it's always different. So it's really hard to describe our work with people because it's always different.
And we work with different. Suddenly, we'll be working with someone and realize we have to go to a different vortex.
Yeah.
We've also had shamans from around the world spend time there: Mongolia, Peru,
Ecuador.
Hawaii. I'm going blank in the moment, but we've done some amazing ceremonies there too.
You've also had the experience the last time you were on the property of the vortexes opening up and connecting with each other in a way that hadn't been happening.
Mm-hmm.
So in that instance, you're working. The land is working with you, and you're working with the land to come more awake.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. It is. It's interactive. I mean, we're not separate. I mean, we're not separate from the earth. So, you know, it's not. This is not an ego trip that we're doing something with the land, and Mother Earth would never say she's doing something with us. But we're all alive. We're all living beings, and we are working together. And growing, there are changes happening on that land. You know, it's not, it opens and there it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a spiral, a natural spiral, earth spiral in the back, almost in the center of the backyard, which has been expanding.
There's this whole new trend of earthing. You heard of earthing? Grounding? Where you literally put your body on the ground because the earth offers energy that heals our bodies and it keeps us in balance. And I mean, imagine earthing in a vortex. I mean, Melanie has one in their backyard, and you know, just really, it's a heightened. If you want to say anything about that.
Yeah, I would just say that. When, after I met Jen and Mary Stella here last year, exactly a year ago, my partner and I were able to realize that a spot that we thought there was a vortex in our backyard, we realized it in fact is. And over that year, we've come to see how it actually is connected in a line with theirs as well. And I also would just add that as someone who's been on their land many times and encircle there, it is just such a powerfully healing place for each individual in their own different way.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I've just experienced really deep transformation there. A lot of, in one of the portals there, I have experienced a lot of travel, interdimensional travel, and experienced a lot of past life memory there that was important for me to learn about, to help me in my journey now. And I just, you know, those of us who go are encircled there with Jen and Mary Stella really experience a lot of amazing journeys and healing and transformation. And like they've said, it's very individual what you experience there. Mm-hmm. But it's an awesome place. And I want to put in a plug for their class that they do that they'll be starting. And they didn't ask me to say this, but last year, my wife and I went, after coming to this, went to their 8-week class. And it's so much fun and it's so amazing to hear. You know, we've heard a taste, a tidbit tonight, but there are so many stories. So I highly recommend that. It's really fun to go to and hear more stories.
Yeah, and this, you know, we were in Greece tonight, but the story in that 8-week class, it's all about that piece of land.
If we have time, I feel like it's important to ask you what that gentleman was telling you about the land when you said, "I'm going to tell you about the land," and you said, "No, I'm going to tell you."
Sure. Basically, He confirmed that there really was a battle and it was very destructive and there was a lot of death.
And it was native on native, which is very odd.
Yeah,
that doesn't true. The Pomo and Miwok were family units basically.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't politics. There wasn't reasons to fight. They lived together on this land, so it was odd.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it wasn't
like outsiders coming in, like Spaniards or anything.
Right. That's true. And it was that someone else, what the battle was about was to take ownership of the power of the land.
Mm.
You can't do that, but that was, you know, that was the attempt. What he told us was, he offered us a ritual that would speed up the healing. But before he would tell us, he said, we had to promise and make a real commitment that we would do the ritual at every new moon for an entire year. And if we would not do that, then, there was no point in telling us the ritual. So, of course, we promised. And so he told us what to do every new moon, and we did. And that year there was a lot of rain and stormy nights, I'll tell you. But we did every new moon, and we weren't here for one. We had to go back to the East Coast for family. But we had someone at the house who had worked, was in circle with us a lot, and she did it for us the one time we missed, but we took it very seriously. Yeah. We're still on well water there. There's the water there is I don't know what to say, it's great water. We had it tested once. I don't even remember what motivated us to do that. But
there were toxic spills on three sides
of us. Oh, that's
right.
Gas station, laundry cleaner, or someone else. So we had the water tested because, you know, and it turns out a friend of Mary's, a high school friend from high school, works there and happened to get this phone call. So they were chatting. And so, because it's very expensive to do this kind of test, so he just did it for her. And when he called back, he said, "I have never seen such good numbers on a piece of paper after a water test, ever." He said, "You have fantastic water."
So if you want to hear more, we are doing the class. We have a sign-up sheet here, if anyone is interested. If you'd like to just be on our mailing list and not, that's the yellow one. And here are the flyers which have the dates of our upcoming events. So, I don't know if...
Do you want to speak more about the class?
Sure.
Basically, we go through and talk about our experiences with the opening of the vortexes and the lessons, you know, that we learn, the way that, you know, the earth and spirits taught us. And it's like introductions to the vortexes and their energy. So,
and we walk through them in order, in chronology. So we'll start with that first vortex that opened at Spring Equinox 2001, and we do them in order so that you can see how the connection begins to be made, although at first you wouldn't know that. I mean, we didn't know that because we didn't know what, we didn't ever, and after the first one opened, of course, we were so surprised, we never expected more, you know, so, but then it kept happening. So, yeah, it really is, we really do tell the details of each of the openings.
And do you do ceremonies or ritual as part of that? Or?
No, we do it. We do a little meditation where people have time to kind of integrate it. Sometimes, do you do the readings in that one? I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Stella does little mini energy check-in readings during the meditation, and so people have feedback on the images they're emitting during that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we tell stories, we have question and answer, we take, it's for 2.5 hours, each one, for 10 times.
And haven't people had profound experiences at times when you're doing that, you know, when they're in the vortex?
Definitely.
Yeah. I would say yes, and I would also say that your story is about living a life that's attuned to energies and how they want to work with your life, and not really knowing exactly what's going on with it, but paying attention to it, which is really needed in the world, and that way of being in the world, of paying attention and going with it, understanding there's an undercurrent that may be drawing you, and you honor that. So hearing your story about that in my way just increased it validated the things going on in my life that I paid attention to.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. So it enriches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have a website too. I think the website is on the flyer. So you can see tons of quotes and things from people.
And you can see the big energy.
Oh, right. When Zurich Batar, the Mongolian, Mongolian shaman was doing a big ceremony. Someone caught a picture of an orb that I wouldn't have believed if I hadn't been in the ceremony. It was like this big. I've seen orbs, right? The pictures of orbs, you know, those energy balls. This is humongous. It's on the website.
So if you have this will be the last question.
Okay. Yeah, this might be a hard question to answer. I'm aware that I ask it. If you had to say in succinctly, like maybe 1, 2, 3, or 1, 2, or 1 statement about what it is that you feel you know or understand, having had all these experiences on your land with the vortexes, if there was a key principle or a key reality that you learned, or a couple of them, that is not part of the general reality, obviously, because these kind of experiences are not what people generally are aware of or attuned to. So if you had to say what we understand is blah, 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 about the earth and about the energies, you know, what would you say? Like, what's the main thing?
I'll tell you what's right in my heart right this minute. The most important thing to me is that I feel I finally discovered the promise I made when I came in this body, in this time. The promise I made and the purpose I've had to keep, and that is honoring the earth and doing exactly what I'm doing. I believe, I mean, in every cell in my body, there is no way this whole, how did we even meet?
Mm-hmm. So,
and how does all this happen? And why am I, Boston girl, in Santa Rosa on this particular piece of land,
yeah,
with this woman? It's because I'm doing exactly what I promised to do. And that is honoring the earth and doing what she asks.
Okay, that's it. That's what I was asking. You answered it beautifully. So very simply and succinctly, what it's all about is honoring the earth and doing what she asks.
And I would go one step further. Yes, yes, that. And we need to get it. There is no separation. We're not separate.
Part of that body.
Everything is connected. It's a web.
By saying that we honor, here to honor the earth, separates us from her.
I understand, yeah.
Yeah. So for me, that's the biggest thing. There is no separation. And to get that at such a deep experiential level is extraordinary.
There's a huge gap between the Western view of reality and this understanding. How does that get bridged? Like, I guess it's just the people that
I think
have opened enough,
you know, the more of us just be with the real deal. That, you know, that energy goes out. People are affected by that, whether they recognize it or not, whether it takes them another 20 years or whatever to catch up and integrate it. It's what else can we do but be true? I said earlier there was one vortex that actually...
Yeah, we were supposed to stop 20 minutes ago.
Okay. There was one vortex that actually awakened, that was actually birthed. The others were awakened. It's very clear to us. And there was one that was waiting eons. And I'm not going to tell the whole story. I'm not going to go there because it's a big one. But I'm going to give you the punchline. I am. I'm going to give you the punchline. And it's at an elder, it's under an elderberry tree. Just hear that. The elders, the ancestors. Amazing. And it's the vortex that is the one, the oneness energy.
And well, I just want to say that one, this last little thing, when you, it for me, it's been an ongoing experience of just being open to all the connections, you know, not a place I was in originally at all. And that's, you know, that kind of thing changes your life, you know, when you can be open to being connected or to openings. The openings of the vortex of Earth is about us opening as human beings too.
What do you say? One more or no?
One more.
Okay, go.
Okay. This ring is my wedding to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was performed a while ago, quite a while ago. And it was also performed in the future. And I'll write to you and I'll tell you about the wedding. your email's on here, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So,
yeah.
In leaving, one of the things that we always like to do is, I'm going to ask you all to stand. Whenever a group comes together, energy is created, and today lots of beautiful, loving energy feels like it came up. So what we're going to do is we're going to gather this up from the earth, and we're going to bring it up, and we're going to share it with the world. It would be unjust for us to try and hold on to this just for ourselves. So go to your heart, to what it was that was touched in you tonight, what was brought up, what was healed, what was touched. And as you touch into that, knowing that this is what you're going to share with the planet, we're going to go to the earth with our hands adding our voice, we're going to gather it up. The only thing missing was our little dog, Max.
I know.
Look at her.
Sleeping. Energy.
Oh,
energy.
Thank you.
With us in
sorry.
Our heart.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes,
I want to thank you for being here. It was wonderful. It's always good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I want to thank everybody for coming, Many Rivers, you know, and participating in this wonderful evening.
Mm, thank you.
Here, the presence here. Mm. You know, really wonderful. There's a donation bowl on the counter. Any amount you can contribute would be great to receive. A portion goes to our speakers to support their work. A portion goes to the store so that we can continue to have events like this. Good to see you. I look forward to seeing you soon.